Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I'm truly terrified and spooky. Okay, not really. It's more of just a fun thing this year.
I don't know. There's some unsettling stuff in this.
Mostly in the first one.
There's bits here and there that are... Honestly, I find the third one actually the most unsettling, especially considering now. But we'll get to that,
yeah,
I guess.
That's true.
We are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. For only $2 a month, you can gain access to all of our bonus content, all kinds of stuff. Thoroughly encourage you to check it out. We have a person to thank, Matthew.
One of the best people in the world? Okay.
That is true. Tim Jar, I think that's how you say his last name. Tim, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
On to this week's episode. It is Treehouse of Horror 7, the first episode of Season 8. We're here. It's Season 8.
Woo!
I'm so excited. This is episode 4.
You would be.
Episode, what does that mean? Season 8's great.
It is. You love Season 8. I'm just saying.
But you don't? Is that what you're saying? You don't?
Not at all. Not in the slightest bit.
That implication you would be is it's not we would be. We are. It's you. I don't like that tone, Matt. I don't appreciate that tone.
Then, too bad.
I need more joy. More joy in your tone. A joyful tone.
No thanks. I'm good.
Episode originally aired October 27th, 1996. Written by Ken Keeler, Dan Greaney, and David S. Cohen, respectively. Directed by Mike B. Anderson. Finished 31st in the ratings. Nielsen rating of 10.5. Approximately 10.2 million viewing households. The third highest rated show on Fox that week, following Millennium and the X-Files. Millennium.
Was it like the season premiere of Millennium? Because I can't imagine that ever. Or series premiere, I think it was.
It probably was the series premiere. We have a thing that will... It's created by Chris Carter.
Uh-huh, we know that.
Original release was October 25th, 1996. So yes, that was the series premiere that week, was Millennium.
Gotcha.
On Friday night.
Makes sense.
I don't...
Fox always knows where to put them.
Yeah, that's... They're just tremendous at putting out new shows right where everyone wants to watch TV. Millennium was fine. All right, Millennium.
I'm not saying that Millennium was a bad show. It was a spinoff of the X-Files, right?
Not really.
It's the Chris Carter-ness. Okay.
No, it was Lance Hendrickson being very Lance Hendrickson-y. I think that was. I think that's what I vaguely recall. It was spooky with Lance Hendrickson, like an end of the world apocalypse stuff. It was fine. It was I liked it for what it was. It's not like amazing or anything, but it was interesting. Whatever. The couch gag. The Grim Reaper kills the entire family and uses them as a footstool.
Ha 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 ha.
It wasn't bad. It begins with Homer on fire, and then the couch gag begin. It goes on. The episode does guest star Phil Hartman as Bill Clinton.
Aww.
He's not a puppy.
No, but I miss him, and you know. Rest stuff and junk.
Rest in power, Phil Hartman. The episode begins with the first story called The Thing and I. It is a parody of Basket Case. They say Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like, Hugo's a little deformed, but that's about the extent of Hunchback of Notre Dame.
It's true,
stuff.
And it feels it's more like, oh, this is what happened if you kept someone indoors for the entire and never let them wash their hair. That's most of Hugo.
It's way more like Basket Case, even though they have said that it's not that was not based on Basket Case, even though Basket Case is about a secret conjoined twin. I don't, like, come on, guys. You can just, like, did you really come up simultaneously with the idea of a secret conjoined twin? I guess it's possible, but Bart and Lisa hear strange noises in the attic, and they don't know what they are, and so they ask Marge and Homer.
Did you guys hear something moving around in the attic last night?
Attic? Oh, that's silly. Seriously, though, don't ever go up there.
Homer, isn't it about time for the, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Go feed it. Fish head, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Fish heads, Matt.
Indeed, everyone loves the fish heads.
Do you know what that is from?
I don't actually.
It is a song called Fish Heads.
Of course it is.
By Barnes and Barnes. So, you know, it's a weird, not a parody, or I don't know, it's a weird, just a weird music thing. I actually have a little clip, and I It's very, I would encourage everyone to go look at it on YouTube, because it's like a it's like a music video that is mostly video more than music, and it's very, very bizarre, but I have a little bit of the music.
Fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, eat them up, yum. Fish heads, roly-poly fish heads.
The morning, laughing happy fish heads, in the evening, floating in the soup.
There, it goes on for quite a while, but that is the you get the gist of it.
I get the gist of it. That's true.
You should watch that video, Matt. Go watch that music video. I'm going to send a link to you, and you can watch. It's truly bizarre. But
I've seen a lot of truly bizarre things. I don't need to say any more things.
Oh, come on, Matt. You got to expose yourself.
I got in trouble for that last time, so I'm not gonna do that anymore.
Touche, Robbie. Touche. Bart sees something crawling around in the vents at night, and they bother Homer with more questions.
What's up there?
Yeah, is it a monster?
We have to know.
Come on, what's the secret?
No more questions. I worked my butt off to feed you four kids, and all you do is what?
Three? We have three kids, Homer.
Yeah, three nosy kids. And you know what happens to nosy kids who ask too many questions?
No, what happens? Does something happen to nosy kids who ask questions? What happens?
Yep, that's what happens.
So the parents go out and leave Bart and Lisa home. And they, of course, take this opportunity to check the attic and inadvertently let out whatever is up there. Just in time for Marge and Homer to return.
See, Marge, who needs a car wash when you can just drive around in the rain?
Mom, Dad, we saw something in the attic! We saw something in the attic!
You went into the attic? I'm very disappointed and terrified.
Oh, my God, Marge, it's escaped!
Yes, Doctor. It's what we've always feared. It's loose. Hugo is loose. See you soon.
Who or what is Hugo?
I'm afraid we haven't been entirely honest with you, Bart. You see, you have a brother.
So I have two brothers?
Lisa, please. Yes, Bart, you have a twin brother. You see, when you were born, there was an irregularity.
A monstrous irregularity. Yes, I remember Bart's birth well. You don't forget a thing like Siamese twins.
I believe they prefer to be called conjoined twins.
And hillbillies prefer to be called sons of the soil. But it ain't gonna happen.
Well, thankfully we don't talk about hillbillies much anymore.
Not by that name. I don't think hillbillies is a little bit outdated.
I believe we call them Appalachian Americans now.
I don't think that's true either.
Really? Oh, okay.
You're the first person I've ever heard say that, Matt.
Oh, I guess I listen to different podcasts than you do.
Oh, I guess that I guarantee you that is 100% true. I know exactly what podcasts you listen to, what ones I listen to. So we found out about Hugo. There's a nice, you know, I really like, I think all the stories in this work very well on their own. They're fast. They even have their own little bit of mystery, especially in this one. I like there is a little bit of mystery of like, what is Hugo? What is going on? What is in the attic? What is this? What has escaped? So everyone is searching for Hugo. Of course, they go out in the rain to find him while Bart stays home to tape the hockey game.
And to be fair, the first place they check was Radio Shack, which is a good instinct, honestly.
Are you saying like attic dwelling monsters go to Radio Shack?
From Florida, yes. In other states, it's usually basement dwelling.
Oh, got it. All right, good. Have we seen the actual Springfield hockey team?
Not yet, I don't believe so. I'm trying to think, when do we see their actual hockey team? It's a long time. It might not even be before season 10, I don't think, so we see their actual hockey team. Actually, the only time I can think of us seeing the Springfield hockey team is when the Simpsons get like the box seats and they tell them who's going to win early.
We need to know that, man.
I don't know what episode. Well, you know.
They do need to know that. But Bart is left alone to tape the hockey game. And, of course, Hugo is there. Hugo is loose, and he basically captures Bart and prepares him for surgery.
You're here, aren't you?
Yes, Bart. I never left you.
What do you want from me?
You'll see. After the surgery.
Ah! You're crazy!
Am I? Well, perhaps we're all a little crazy. I know I am. I went mad after they tore us apart. But I'll be sane once I sew us back together.
But you'll kill both of us!
No, it's easy. Look, I've been practicing. I made a pigeon rat. Well, let's get started. You want to be on the right or the left?
Do we know who does Hugo's voice?
It's Nancy Cartwright. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Oh, okay. She does a good job. It sounds enough like Bart to be recognizable, but it's still, you know.
Yeah, it's obviously weird, but yeah, it's just enough like Bart that it sounds really good. It does sound like a monster-y kind of voice. I like the character design on Hugo a lot. He's looks just enough like, much like the voice, just enough like Bart, while also slightly weird. They just as Bart is about to have a Hugo attached to him, which that pigeon rat,
it's pretty impressive, honestly.
That it's alive, I guess. It's still those animals are still alive. Yes, I guess that is impressive. I don't think they'll stay alive.
So he must have sewed them together on a skin level, because if he had attached any organs to each other, they would not function very well. Birds and you know, mammals in general are not a good combination. I mean, nucleated red blood cells mixing with non-nucleated red blood cells, that's not to mention white blood cells. And I mean, it's hard enough to do, you know, organ transplants without rejection. If he could connect any organs, he should be, you know, working at some kind of medical school somewhere.
You don't know any of this through experience, right, Matt?
No, not at all. I do not hang around medical schools and use their equipment at night without them knowing.
Good to know. That's very reassuring. Sometimes I worry. They break in. They stop everything from going on, including a amazingly crafted physical gag where Dr. Hibbert acts like he's holding a mirror up to Hugo, and then he's just an empty picture frame in which he punches Hugo through it. Oh.
Hey, that's how you win. You punch things. That's the one thing we've learned from Homer.
Punch that little 10-year-old boy, that little monster 10-year-old boy, knocks him out. We find out that, however, after Hugo is safely unconscious, that he's not disposed of.
Indisposed, then fine.
That perhaps not everything is the way they seems.
You know, isn't it interesting how the left or sinister twin is invariably the evil one? I had this theory Wait a minute. Hugo's scar is on the wrong side. He couldn't have been the evil left twin. That means the evil twin is, and always has been, Bart.
Oh, don't look so shocked.
It's great. I really like this act in particular, because it does a complete horror, crazy horror parody reference thing that it obviously doesn't belong in the proper Simpsons, but it really does still kind of exemplify the characters really well. You know,
it really could fit. If this had happened in a regular Simpsons episode, you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense now.
Yeah, Bart is the evil one. Of course he is. That makes perfect sense. Also, I think that this little story works very well, like, in the creepy kind of horror sense, in that, you know, in stories like this, where families hide things from their children, and it's not always, hey, you have a twin brother, a mutant twin brother hide that we keep in the attic that we feed fish heads to. You know, it's not always that kind of stuff, but it is, you know, there's lots of secrets that adults keep, and they're always kind of big to children, even if they're not mutant in the attic, you know, big.
Yeah, it's like kids think that what their parents are keeping from them is the secrets of the universe, when really it's just, oh yeah, you had an aunt, but she died while you were, you know, sleeping in her lap. Those are the kind of things you keep from kids.
What? Does that happen to you, Matt? That seems like a very...
that was just something I had on the top of my head. as far as you know.
Because that is terrifying. That's awful.
Yes, I'm a black nephew. So
what?
It's like the Black Widow thing, but, you know, actually that came out sounding wrong. Never mind, let's just push past this.
Oh, okay, well, they find a solution for their problems in that they now keep Hugo with the rest of the family, and Bart lives in the attic now, who has to eat fish heads.
Ooh, that's got to be rough.
You get fish used heads, to it after a while. You know, they probably use it's like a Vegemite.
Oh.
No Vegemite?
Oh.
On
Vegemite,
toast.
Marmite, all the mites. All mites are terrible.
All the mites? What about Mighty Mouse?
All the mites. It's okay, I guess. You know?
All right. But with that, we go to commercial.
And when we come back, we see the Genesis tub, which I didn't recognize this. Do you reckon? Is this like a Twilight Zone thing or something?
Yeah, it's a Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, okay. Just making sure.
Although that
it seemed Twilight Zone-y.
It's based on the Twilight Zone episode. This is what it is referencing, but that episode itself was also based on a lot of pulp science fiction stuff. So, you know,
makes sense. I mean, it just feels very like base science fictiony kind of thing.
Yeah, it's Twilight Zone. So yes.
Yeah. So basically, the segment starts out with Lisa losing a tooth, and she decides, hey, I can use this to prove, well, I'll let her do it in her words.
Science has already proven the dangers of smoking, alcohol, and Chinese food, but I can still ruin soft drinks for everyone.
One, I'm pretty sure even back then people knew how terrible soft drinks were, and two, Chinese food has been rescinded because MSG is not that bad for you. So, public service announcement, Chinese food okay, soda, always been bad.
Did anyone ever not eat Chinese food because of MSG?
I don't know. I want to say it was like a Richie Rich the movie with Macaulay Culkin where they mentioned something about MSG and Chinese food.
Well, I mean,
but it was in a glowing way that it would calm you down.
Well, it's I like from reading about like MSG in like the 70s and 80s, it was a thing, like it would give you headaches or something. But I never have heard anyone, this is a complete anecdotal evidence, but I've never heard anyone say, no, let's not get Chinese, there's MSG in it, or there might be MSG in it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think at one point people thought it was bad, and then they realized, oh, wait, it's just the massive amounts of sodium in Chinese food that gives you headaches.
And,
surprise.
And, well, I would. Sugar that Chinese, like, obviously it's not healthy for you, it's a bunch of sugar and carbs, like, and very little like actual nutrients, but it tastes delicious.
You're making my mouth water, Robbie.
It tastes delicious. Who cares? Like, crab rangoon is the best food that has ever existed on earth. I don't need anything else in my life, just give me that. They don't have it. I can't find it the right way in Canada. I need help, please. Send help please
Someone send Robbie at the very least a recipe. Especially if you work at a Chinese food restaurant and you know, like, because you know that the suppliers that Chinese food restaurants get are special. Like, they only send food to Chinese food restaurants. So they're doing something special that makes it ridiculously delicious and terrible for you. And everyone needs a little bit of that from time to time. Anyway, Lisa takes the tooth and in her attempt to prove, I use this in quotation marks, prove the dangers of soft drinks, she puts it in a little cola bath, which is cute. But she... Bart comes in with brimming with static electricity and a balloon attached to his head and uses it to shock Lisa, who then shocks the tooth because that's the way static electricity works. And unbeknownst to Lisa, this also starts a chain reaction. And the next morning when she gets up, she realizes she sees mold on the tooth, and that's science fair pay dirt, except mold doesn't grow in soda because it's too acidic. So good job, Simpson writers.
Hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
Exactly. But Lisa is distracted.
Tiny little people. My God, I've created life.
Lisa, breakfast! We're having waffles!
Ooh, waffles. Hey, these aren't waffles. These are just square pancakes.
Oh, I'm sorry, honey. The waffle iron's in the shop.
Waffle iron's been in the shop forever.
So, yes, apparently we learned that waffles are much more than just square pancakes, which they are. Waffle batter is, in general, is sweeter, so that waffles can, in generally, be eaten without any type of syrup. But, you know, we all know they're better with syrup. And that the waffle iron at the Simpson house is unreliable at best.
Well, it's in the shop.
Well, yeah, and apparently it's been in the shop forever. So either it keeps going in and out of the shop, or it's just dead and they got rid of it. And
maybe they're lying to Lisa. Maybe the repairman is just not very good at his job.
Maybe he's like one of those old people.
And I do want to say that also waffles have more surface to mass.
Absorb the liquids.
Yeah.
And they're usually like stiffer. So it's easy.
It's crispy.
You add more liquids and it's more crispy, which makes them better.
We're getting some good food talk in this episode. I like it a lot.
I know. Can you tell I'm hungry? Anyway, Lisa goes back to her tiny tub of people to find that they're still evolving. While Lisa was at breakfast, they developed Lutherans, which, all right, that's weird parallel evolution right there.
Well,
maybe
it's not really evolution. That's not in the technical way. They're not like their bodies aren't changing. They're just they're very fast, like progressing through technology trees very fast. Like it's on Civ. It's like playing Civ, like in super fast forward speed. I think they're not like growing fins or anything, or like becoming brains.
That's true. It's more of a cultural evolution than a physical evolution, but that's generally the way humans evolve, and that tends to take place on timescales that are much shorter than actual physical evolution. So that's probably the easiest thing for them to say, you know.
I guess it's
plus they can watch Lisa and learn her language.
Exactly.
But they have electricity by bedtime. Lisa goes to bed, and while she's asleep, a squadron of, you know, space type fighters, which they're still in an atmosphere, but they look very, you know, retro futuristic, come out of the bowl and attack Bart. And I just want to say that whatever the big ship, the destroyer is like the size of the entire dish that they're in. So that must have taken a lot of resources. I'm not sure where they got all the whatever they made that thing out of from, but apparently they did. They recomposed, I guess, the plastic of the bowl to make a spaceship.
They have matter transformers. They just take like atoms from, they just take oxygen atoms and turn that into spaceships.
Well, shoot, I'm sure we could scale that up pretty easily. Maybe Lisa will win that science fair.
But that was you forgot Bart attacking them. Bart did attack them.
Oh, that's right. I did forget. Bart came in and did the whoops, my finger slipped, and like destroyed their whole society. And so this was in retaliation to that. Bart comes in to attack them after fending off their assault on him. And he basically tells Lisa, you can't protect them. Eventually, it'll be flushed time for toilet time for Tiny Town. Wow, I can't talk. That is a tongue twister.
I do want to say that I think that their city probably does go below, like I think there's like their city's deep. I think like what you see on the surface level is not the entirety of their civilization. I think they live underground, basically.
So even when they move the dish around, they're taking the underground with them.
Move the dish around? No, inside the dish. Like because the surface.
Oh, inside the dish. I got you.
The surface was the surface of the soda where the mold was growing. So I like obviously it had some depth to it. I don't think the city sunk down. I think that they just, like, the soda solidified, and they dug, especially with that.
Makes sense.
Which, in fact, their city effectively became, like, Coruscant, like, by the end there. So I think, like, it probably had to have some depth there.
Indeed. It's good to know Robbie knows his Star Wars trivia.
I know enough to get by.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I settle a bet I have with my wife. Have you or have you not read the Harry Potter novels?
You're both right.
Have you read some of them?
I've read some of them. I gave up at 4.
Have you seen the movies?
I saw the first one.
Okay. She thinks you have neither seen nor read any of Harry Potter. You seem confused when I make references to it.
I saw the first movie, and I read half the books when I was 13 years old.
All right. That's good enough. You know enough to get by. Okay.
And I'm on the internet. So, I'm on the internet that constantly is giving me information about Harry Potter without me even asking for it. So...
That's true. It's become our cultural touchstone. Kids will grow up knowing Harry Potter, never having seen it.
I know just enough to be dangerous.
There you go. But at this point, Lisa realizes that Bart is correct. She can't protect her little people forever. But luckily, depending on who you're talking to, they figure out a way to join with Lisa.
Welcome to our world, most gracious Lisa.
Your world is incredible, and you speak English.
We have listened to you speak since the dawn of time, O Creator, and we have learned to imitate you exactly.
You think I'm God?
But of course, you looked down on us from heaven. You gave us life, and only your divine intervention can save us from the devil.
The devil? What devil?
The one you call Bart.
Oh, no, you don't understand. Bart's just my brother.
The devil is your brother? I must say, we find that quite perplexing.
God? Hi, Bill Watson. I live in the Clark Building. I have a question. If you're so good, why do you allow bad things to happen?
Why am I so fat?
Why do bad things happen to good people?
Listen, I can take care of everything. All you have to do is unshrink me.
Unshrink you? Well, that would require some sort of a rebigulator, which is a concept so ridiculous it makes me want to laugh out loud and chortle. But not at you, O holiest of gods, with the wrathfulness and the vengeance and the blood rain and the hey, 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 it hurts me.
So, yes, they debigulate her and don't have a rebigulator, which... This goes against so many tenets of science, I don't even know where to begin. So, let's start with how an atom works. And, not even going to stop me, Robbie?
It's usually better to just let you go, and you'll get tired out, and then you'll give up, and then I can just edit it out later. It's easier than having a fight.
Oh, okay, fine. Then the next time I see you, I'm going to whip out the whiteboard, and we're going to go into why this will never, ever work.
I don't want to know the real science of debigulators. Matt, I'm fine with it working.
Actually, the really funny part about this is it comes up in Futurama, where the professor makes little tiny robots of people, and then Fry asks, why don't you just shrink people? And he's like, that would require extremely tiny atoms, and if you price those little, I'm not made of money. So it's extra funny if you've seen that Futurama episode. But at this point...
Yes, you know what? It's super extra funny when people explain... how science in popular fiction doesn't work, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I really find it hilarious when I get lectured about how Star Trek is not possible. It's so great how warp drives are completely unfeasible. Thank you. I need that explained.
Actually, hyperspace is completely infeasible. Warp drive, they're working on it. It might be possible.
What happens next, Matt?
Bart comes in, and while Lisa is debigulated, he steals the tiny town and basically uses it as a science fair experiment, which consists of Bart's tiny town. I don't really see how that's a science fair experiment, but
his competition was Martin's
milk carton ukulele.
Yeah, like that's
and Milhouse's volcano.
Yeah, I mean, come on, he has a little tiny town.
I did not go to the best elementary school, but I would have been kicked out and disqualified for anything even remotely that crappy in my science fairs. And you had to have some data. You had to have a hypothesis, you know? So science works. Nothing? Yeah, nothing.
You have a clip for us, Matt?
I do, actually. At this point, Bart wins the science fair, and Lisa is upset.
Principal Skinner, wait! I created the universe! Give me the gift certificate! Great. Stuck in this lousy tub for the rest of my life. Shouldn't you people be groveling? And bring me some shoes. Nice ones.
She'll want socks, too. I'll get socks.
So, yes, that is how it ends. Lisa is stuck being tiny for the rest of her life, and I have to keep the people fondling at her. Otherwise, she'll have to go back to being a tiny yellow person in a blue people's world.
I think eventually they'd come up with a rebigulator.
It's true. They do have Mini Frank.
They advance their technology so fast. Come on. They're not going
to... That's true. I feel like Lisa would have been dead by the time Bart got to the science fair. Unless these people live extremely long lives.
I think Lisa would be fine. I think the rest... I think she still retain her longevity. Like, in smaller things generally do... I don't know. They're not insects. That's the thing. Like, they're just small people. So I think they'd be fine.
Well, we don't know their genesis. It's possible they evolved from insects. It's possible they evolved from something else. But they do tend to look like people. So, you know, maybe they just evolved super quick. But yes, tiny things generally live and die in much smaller. These apparently, you know, like E. coli bacteria, they can go through millions of generations in just a couple decades. So maybe if we shrunk down, that wouldn't happen to us, but maybe it would. Who knows? But yes, everyone around her probably would be dead by the time they got to school. So the genius of Minnie Frank may have passed on.
I think they have normal lifespans.
Oh, okay. So basically, all of those people were born and lived, became middle-aged by the time Lisa, like, within a day and a half.
They were born, they came out of eggs, middle-aged.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
They're like Gene Hackman. You know, they're actually quite young, they just look middle-aged.
All right, then. Fair enough.
Like, you watch Gene Hackman
movies. That's totally...
Gene Hackman movies, like, from the 70s, like, and he was quite young then. He still looked like he did in the 90s, you know, or the 2000s.
Well, people aged differently back then.
Which back then? The 70s or the Middle Ages?
The 70s. Even up until, well, actually, maybe not the 70s, but up until, like, the 50s or 60s, smoking and lots of other things made people look really old really quickly. Like, if you look at people who were famous movie stars in the 40s and when they were in their 30s, they all look like they're pushing 60 nowadays. Just because of their toxic lifestyles.
And we move on to the final story, to Citizen Kang. Begins with Homer fishing at night, angrily yelling at fish. Which I think Homer would be fine not catching fish as long as he was quite drunk. That's probably the problem. He just didn't have enough to drink yet. But he gets abducted with on his little dinghy by Kang and Kodos.
Oh my God! Space aliens! Don't eat me! I have a wife and kids. Eat them!
Silence! We are travelers from a certain nearby ringed planet whose name we'd prefer not to mention. My name is Kang, and this is my sister, Kodos.
Hello. I suppose you want to probe me. Well, might as well get it over with.
Stop. We have reached the limits of what rectal probing can teach us.
Are there any limits to what rectal probing can teach you? I don't think there are.
I think the limit is probably quite low. I think you're not going to get a bunch out of that. But Homer is quite willing to give up his family as long as he lives, and apparently that the rectal probing line is one of Matt Groening's favorite lines in the entire series.
Well, it's a pretty good line.
It's pretty good. But then King and Kodos, of course, they do the take us to your leader shtick, and Homer's like, well, that'd probably be the president, but there is an election, which, I mean, this episode was came out around Halloween, so literally it was a week away or so, and like we might have a new leader. So, I don't know, even though I think at the time, I don't know, Bob Dole was, I was 11 years old, math, I was 11, and I don't really quite remember the election, so I do know that Clinton beat Dole handily, but they abduct Dole and Clinton, and there's a little bit inconsistency here, because Dole had resigned from his senatorial position months before this aired, but they still call him Senator Dole throughout this episode because it was, you know, they recorded.
Well, that's the way it works. It's an honorary title. It's like you don't could stop calling somebody Mr. President when they stop being president.
I think you do stop calling people senator when they're not senator anymore, unless they're like jerks about it.
Yeah, I feel like most of them would be jerks about it.
I don't know. Is Bob Dole still alive?
Good question.
Yeah, he's still alive. He's 93 years old.
That's impressive. Wow.
He is yeah.
Go Bob Dole.
He was quite old at the time, 73, and now he's 93. Dear Lord. He's long-lasting, that gentleman. But they get abducted, and Kang and Kodos bio-duplicate them, of course. That's how that works, right, Matt? There's more science for you to dissect, right? That's exactly correct. That's how you do that, right?
That is 100% correct. I got nothing to dissect there.
Okay, good. Well, both Dole and Clinton get put in, like, stasis tubes. Homer is doused in rum and then thrown back into his boat, which is honestly really smart, really clever, fun way to make people not believe someone, obviously.
That's true, and they didn't have to kill him, which is, I feel like how that would end most of the time.
Yeah, they, King and Kodos, as Clinton and Dole, try and fit in. They don't do a great job.
At an appearance this morning, President Clinton made some rather cryptic remarks, which aides attributed to an overly tight necktie.
I am Clinton. As overlord, all will kneel trembling before me and obey my brutal commands. End communication.
That's Slick Willie for you, always with the smooth talk.
March! March! There I was. I had just caught the largest fish you'd ever seen when I was abducted by a flying saucer.
Sure you were, Rummy.
That's one of the creatures!
Senator Dole, why should people vote for you instead of President Clinton?
It makes no difference which one of us you vote for. Either way, your planet is doomed. Doomed!
Well, a refreshingly frank response there from Senator Bob Dole.
These candidates make me want to vomit in terror.
I do a lot of that vomiting in terror.
I don't necessarily do the... I'm more of a like a sweater. Like, I sweat a lot when I'm afraid.
That's true. I sweat a lot all the time, so you can't really tell.
I'm not much of a vomiter. I try and limit my vomit. That's pretty gross. They... We get some more, I guess, political analysis, political satire with Kang and Kodos.
73-year-old candidate Bob Dole.
Yay! Abortions for all. Very well. No abortions for anyone. Abortions for some. Miniature American flags for others. Yay! Fooling these Earth voters is easier than expected.
Yes, all they want to hear are bland pleasantries embellished by an occasional saxophone solo or infant kiss.
Mr. President, sir, people are becoming a bit confused by the way you and your opponent are, well, constantly holding hands.
We are merely exchanging long protein strings. If you can think of a simpler way, I'd like to hear it.
Exchanging long protein strings.
Indeed. Also, that is the best solution to the abortion debate ever. I don't know why no one has put that particular plan into effect.
The past election has taken a lot of the joy I used to get out of this story is taken a lot
it
of
it seems
the,
too real now.
It's taken a lot of the joy out of it, and I still do appreciate it all, but I just can't anymore. A lot of the political jokes are a little not. I don't know. They just don't do it. They don't really make it. They're not funny anymore to me. They're just kind of. They make me sigh a little bit.
They make you sad for a day when this was satire, not reality.
They have a debate that's cost $5 to get in. I don't think in Springfield, by the way, for the presidential election, they're having a debate in Springfield.
of course, Springfield is the center of life.
Of course it is. Of course. I mean, in The Simpsons, it might as well be. So we have a debate with Kang and Kodos.
My fellow Americans, as a young boy, I dreamed of being a baseball. But tonight I say we must move forward, not backward, upward, not forward. And always twirling, twirling, twirling towards freedom.
You ever dream of being a baseball, Matt?
I can't say that I do. I also need to point out, I forgot to mention earlier, that Kang and Kodos were very nondescript about the planet they're from. Nearby a ringed planet, there are like five of those in our solar system. Come on, guys. You got to help us out a little bit.
They're from Rigel 7, I believe, classically. Canonically, they're from Rigel 7.
Well, they say that's what they call it, but I mean, they said that a nearby ringed planet. I mean, I guess it depends on your term, nearby. But...
I mean, if you have interstellar travel, then nearby it could be anywhere.
Maybe they don't. Maybe they have
How are older Kang and Kodos then? Because there's a year's journey then.
Yeah, probably. I mean, maybe they can just get fast enough to travel around the solar system.
Like, is it faster than light?
I doubt it. I mean, but I mean, if they have some kind of, you know, incredible propulsion technology, then they could get around the solar system but not be at an appreciable fraction of light. I mean, they could get across the solar system in just a couple years, maybe at, what, 100th the speed of light, maybe, you know, a 50th.
We're doing this is a very heavy on the science talk. This is a very science heavy episode.
Well, it's a treehouse of horror. So
of course we have to analyze it. That's what makes it really funny. Homer is kicked out of the debate after he tries to allege that both Kay and Otis are aliens, which of course they actually are. But he uncovers their spaceship, which is not very well hidden, and sets to release both the real Clinton and Dole.
Hold on, guys. I'll help you.
Oh, no. Am I still here? I don't want to serve out my term naked in a tube.
I am so mad at the Secret Service right now. Hey, who the hell are you?
I'm Homer Simpson, sir, and I'm going to get you back to Washington before it's too late.
You know, Senator, being in suspended animation gave me time to think. Partisan politics are tearing our country apart.
You got a point there, Bill. If you and I are going to whoop these one-eyed space fellas, we're going to have to set aside our differences.
Together, we can lead America into a new golden age.
Friend, you got a deal. Homer, let us out. It's time to tear those aliens a third corn shoot.
Then
how exactly does Bob Dole know how many corn shoots they have?
I think he's just guessing. They both die.
Oh, okay.
Both Bill Clinton and Bob Dole are killed then. Like, they are sent out into the vacuum.
By Homer.
They are sent out into the vacuum of space, and then they just stop moving. It's actually pretty brutal. Like, they're just dead, floating out there. Homer...
But at least they got it fairly accurate. It's not like those movies where you explode in space. They just, you know, kind of stop living.
That is what dying is, Matt.
Yeah, but they don't, like, explode. They don't break up or anything like that. They just, you know, there's no oxygen out there, and that's what kills them. They asphyxiate.
Wouldn't their blood boil? They're in the vacuum of space. That's a myth? How many people have you sent into space, Matt?
Too many to mention on a podcast. Okay. Lots of people here.
Okay, good. I understand. They die. That's Homer kills the presidential candidates, and then he crashes the ship into the White House, or is it the Capitol building? Capitol building.
I believe it's the Capitol building.
It's the Capitol building, and of course, Kang and Kodis just happen to be there, and he unmasks them.
Take a good look at your beloved candidates. They're nothing but hideous space reptiles. It's true. We are aliens. But what are you going to do about it? It's a two-party system. You have to vote for one of us.
You're right. This is a two-party system.
Well, I believe I'll vote for a third-party candidate.
Go ahead. Throw your vote away.
That noise at the end was Ross Perot punching his hat.
Yes, because he was a third-party candidate at the time. A perennial, I believe, three elections worth of a third-party candidate.
I don't know. I know 92 and 96. I don't know. Was the third? Was it?
I thought 88 he 88? Was involved, but I could be wrong. I was five at the time. So
yeah, it's not necessarily. We're not. It's too early for that to be studied in any of our history classes. Too recent, I guess.
Well, we got another 50 years for that.
I guess that's true. But Kang wins.
I don't understand why we have to build a ray gun to aim at a planet I never even heard of.
Don't blame me. I voted for Kodos.
Go!
Another thing that
you've heard way too much this year.
Yeah, I've heard it a lot, and it kind of bums me out. This story is, one, it's, they even say they're like, they broke so many rules of The Simpsons because this is a specifically this time episode. Like, it doesn't work. Like, it only makes sense in the context of that very specific time period. You can't.
That's true, but I feel like there's a couple jokes in that particular segment that you have to know something about that election to be fine funny. But really, you know, you could replace Clinton and Dole with other candidates, and it works pretty well anyway, if you know anything about the U.S. And maybe in 50 years, when our government has collapsed and we're, you know, voting by putting seashells into some person's face and to elect a magistrate, that will not be true. But for now, it's still fairly relevant.
I don't like the relevancy. I don't want to watch The Simpsons and be bummed out.
So what you're saying is you really hope that both of the last candidates were space mutants and we are eventually able to drive them off.
Now that is
with the board of the nail in it.
I don't indulge in that kind of fantasy, Matt. People are people. Oh, okay. There's no reptiles. That'd be really nice if, you know, all those conspiracy theories were true and there's a weird like reptile race that's doing all that stuff, but no, that'd be too nice.
No, that doesn't acknowledge that people are awful.
Yeah, it's just people. You have to get through that. That's it. That's how the episode ends. I don't know. It's a good Treehouse of Horror. I really like all the segments. Even I think the third one I don't like as much as I used to. But that's not really because
I actually like the third one more because I'm like, wow, that's really
It's not that like I think that comes up all the time now that like how prescient the Simpsons are. Like they constantly are predicting things and they constantly, you know, have made you know, foreshadowed things that have come to pass in both society in our culture and in politics and all that stuff. I mean, it's impressive and I respect it. It doesn't necessarily make me like the episodes, whatever they are, more. It generally makes me go, that's sad, because Simpsons is a comedy show that is using like parody and satire. And then we are so bad as a culture that we get to their level. That's not, like, I don't think that's good.
It's not something to be happy about. It's like, oh, we've sunk to the level of previous satire. That's if we all started eating babies. Everyone would be like, Jonathan Swift was right. And we would all be very sad.
We're not going to go into baby eating humor. We're going to move on from that. We are above that, at least.
That's our level.
That's our level. When we get to baby eating jokes, that's when we move on. We will rank those segments at the end of the show. No submissions for my favorite episode. However, if you do have a favorite episode, you may submit it to simpsonshowpod@gmail.com, explaining why a certain episode is your favorite. And when we get to that episode, we'll rank it. Heads up, guys. Our next episode is You Only Move Twice.
And we will be here. We will start recording sometime next week. We may finish in time to have it out that Sunday. If we stop recording at like 11:59,
I just want to give you guys a heads up. I know this happens every time. I get them like the night before the Sunday it airs. That we record a little bit earlier, so please get them in if you're going to send them in. Again, simpsonshowpod@gmail.com. We can move on to our next segment. It is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I'll comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group and see what people are talking about the week or two after an episode debuted. You know, reviews, anything interesting comes up. The reviews of this are wildly disparate. Some people really like it. Some people really hate it. I don't know why they'd hate it. It seems like Treehouse of Horror, above all episodes, are very consistent. Like, they're always, even in the worst seasons, I think the Treehouse of Horror episodes are still fine. Like, they're never bad. They're always interesting.
It's true. It's the one hallmark of Simpsons quality that never seems to dip, is that Treehouse of Horror is almost universally good. It kind of makes you wonder why, right?
Well, it's only seven. I think it's easy to make a 7-minute story that has like is heavily going to be influenced like by whatever it's parodying, whatever it's referencing. Like, hey, we're going to do a 7-minute bit about Harry Potter. Like, okay, like 7 minutes of that is the plot itself will like tell you exactly what that is, and then you can just kind of insert jokes when you want to. Like a lot of those gags kind of tell. Like 7 minutes it's less now because I think the run times have gone down over the years because more commercials. So yeah. Like 6 minutes. Segments maybe, so it's not that hard, I think, to, I mean, like, I don't think that any of these are like, oh no, we have too much stuff to put in, so we're making them longer. I think most of the time it's 6 minutes, it's easy, it's not so bad. I came across someone posting their predictions for season 8. I thought it was fun. I'll read. I predict Fox will make a big deal about the 10th anniversary of Married with Children, but will ignore the 10th anniversary of The Simpsons. I would consider a 10th anniversary of The Simpsons from 1989, not 1987. Like, the Tracy Ullman show is true. Like proto-Simpsons. I would not consider that real Simpsons. That's not the same show, honestly. I predict Hank Azaria will get a Best Supporting Actor Oscar nomination for The Birdcage, but once again, The Simpsons will be skunked at the Emmys. 1997 Oscars. Cuba Gooding Jr. won.
Well, thank goodness for that.
But he did not get nominated.
Aw, sad face.
It's so sad. I predict that later in the season, Fox will stick Simpsons reruns on at 7, some stupid sitcom like Ned and Stacey at 7:30, and the new Simpsons episodes at 8, Ned and Stacey will get canceled anyway. I don't know.
What the hell is Ned and Stacey?
It's probably a forgotten Fox sitcom, and that, I think, actually, that is more prescient than anything Fox canceling television shows. That's not that crazy. I predict that this time next year we'll still be waiting for the Yellow Album. I forget when the Yellow Album came out. It came out in 1998, so he was correct. They were still away at the time of this. It was over a year away. Predictions for best guest voice for season 8 was Jack Lemmon, Five-ish Finkel, or John Waters. I don't think Five-ish Finkel ended up... Was he actually in an episode? I don't think he was.
I don't remember the name.
He's a character actor that you would immediately recognize. He died last year. But he's not credited in any Simpsons episodes. Maybe he got cut out of one or something. Best writer, Dan Greeny. Best new writer, Rachel Polito or Ian Maxtone Graham. His prediction for best episode, My Sister, My Sitter, or what are those little...
The Curly Braces.
It says three phony spinoffs because they didn't have the Simpsons spinoff showcase name on it, I guess, yet. other episodes I expect to be very good. You Only Move Twice, Lisa Sachs, Lisa's Date with Density, Trios of Horror, 7, Bart After Dark, Grade School Confidential, The Brother from Another Series, The Old Man and Lisa, and also in the brackets, Military Academy, because they did not have the name for that episode either. Hint, every episode in season 8 is good. Like Homer Palooza last season, I expect there will be some disappointing episodes. This person is wrong. Seeing how eerily awaited the Springfield Files is, I think it'll disappoint both Simpsons and X-Files fans. Wrong. I also predict that Lisa's Date with Density will be the most controversial episode here. That Springfield Files will cause the most traffic, and the opinions on the twisted world of Marge Simpson will be fairly unified. Finally, the episode that will most offend right-minded, morally upright, decent people is Bart After Dark. They make fun of that in Bart After Dark, honestly. Mm-hmm. I'll try out these predictions out in June to see how I did. There are no bad episodes in season 8. I'll fight you.
It's true. There are okay episodes. There are definitely no bad episodes.
What do you mean there are okay episodes? What's an okay episode?
All right. Let's see here. Season 8. Okay.
Not a one.
I don't know. I know people love the Mysterious Voyage of Homer, but...
What, Matt? No. We're going to have a brawl if you're going to insult the Mysterious Voyage of Homer.
Really? You like... Okay. Burns Baby Birds.
All right.
You'd call that a great episode.
I didn't say great. I said good. I said only good episodes in season 8. Burns Baby Birds has Rodney Dangerfield in it. I give it a lot just because of that. It's not the best episode, but it has Rodney Dangerfield.
I'll give you that. It has Rodney Dangerfield.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. But if you start disparaging Mysterious Voyage of Homer, we're going to have some issues. We have some issues when we get to that episode. Because I'm looking at this list and I go, oh my God, I love all these episodes so much. We can move on to our next segment. It's time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Our listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite season 7 moment? Which, of there are so many good ones, and all the answers are delightful. From Brian, Aurora Borealis, at this time of year, at this time of day, in this part of the country, localized entirely within your kitchen?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Rob, I wash myself with a rag on a stick in the accompanying image. And when Bart snaps out of the daydream and is pantomiming the scrubbing action, I just lose it. Dylan, you're making us pick one moment out of the entirety of such a great season. You two are monsters. Well, yes. I mean, I don't think we make
that's
any...
accurate. I mean, we knew that.
We don't make any bones about us being monsters. I guess from the Flying Hellfish episode, Simpson, can you go 5 seconds without humiliating yourself? Boing. That noise when his pants fall off. How long was that? Gets me every time. Mike, Homer, and Mother Simpson sitting on his car staring in the sky after his mom leaves. Scene always moves me. I could go with pretty much any Moana and Homer moment from this episode, but this is the most emotional. And when I'm looking back at these, I'm like, wow, this is all in this season. That's right. David, well, I didn't think I was rehabilitated, but I guess they needed the extra bed. And now to choose my favorite child, as this is clearly easier than choosing a favorite from season 7. Lauren, the best moment of season 7 from Bart Sells His Soul, the singing of the opening hymn, The Garden of Eden by Iron Butterfly, and poor Mrs. Fish passing out from exhaustion 17 minutes later. Sean, sweet, merciful crap. I almost wrote in my favorite episode based on that one line. Austin, the London Symphony Orchestra playing for Cypress Hill. Where else will you find that? That's very true. And from Kevin, my eyes, the goggles do nothing. Mitch, at Mitch Doyle 13. Oh, crap. I shouldn't have said he was a customer. Oh, crap. I shouldn't have said it was a secret. Oh, crap. I certainly shouldn't have said it was illegal. Oh, it's too hot today. Mr. Schnrub, at Smurious Leader. Seymour, the house is on fire. No, Mother, it's just the Northern Lights. From Robert at Barlow 2711. Then the Indians shot them and took the corn. Daniel at Dan ZK1. Homer, I don't remember saying that. That's with Bart holding up the speech bubble in Marge Be Not Proud. And Tom at Egg Kitten. Town Crier, I'd like to ask you a few questions. One, where's the fife? And two, give me the fife.
Give me the fife. Give me the fife. Give me the fife. Fife. Fife.
From John. I expect the Skinner Chalmers scene from 22 short films will get the most, and rightfully so, but I've gone with another answer. It sticks out in my mind from A Fish Called Selma. The Rock Me Dr. Zaius musical number from Stop the Planet of the Apes, I Want to Get Off. Phil Hartman absolutely nailed those 2 minutes and the whole episode. Epic. Keep doing what you're doing and good luck with the cheese. Thank you, John.
With the cheese, with the cheese, with the cheese, cheese, cheese.
Matt, please. I don't need any more. I have 64 slices of American cheese in my refrigerator right now. It's nearly 4 pounds of cheese.
I don't want you to die, Robbie.
It's nearly 4 pounds. It's just under 4 pounds. It's a hair under four. So, I mean, some of that is the wrapping. So, I mean, it's probably like 3.5 pounds of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I can eat that.
You probably could.
I'm sure I'll feel fine.
You might die a little, but
no, I'll be fine. It'll be fine. What is your answer, Matt?
My answer is no, gay. I wish I were gay. If I was gay, there'd be no problem. No, what I have is a romantic abnormality. That's my answer.
My answer is the Skinner and Chalmers scene from 22 yeah. short films. I can't not do it. It's so good. It's perfect. It is perfect comedy. It is. Like, if I wanted to show someone, like, the ideal form, like, an ideal comedy scene, I would show them that. It is absurdity for the sake of absurdity. It is lovely. It is wonderful. It brings me joy just to think about it. Next week's question, what is your favorite Professor Frink quote? Glavin.
Ooh.
I'll post that question on all of our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod, and you can email us. SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Like and follow at all those places, and you'll get updates on Simpsons. Well, certainly our podcast, and then whenever I see Simpsons stuff and try and post it on there, or whenever I'll be eating that cheese soon, and then there'll be a video on there eventually after I recover or when I get out of the hospital. You know,
you won't go to the hospital probably.
Well, it's free here, man. There's no problem.
That's true, but I would prefer you not be in great pain, you know.
I probably won't go to the doctor, but I can't really guarantee anything about no pain. It's a lot of cheese will be inside of me.
Mm.
It is time.
Sorry, the podcat
is needy.
Expressing her disapproval.
Yeah. We can, speaking of trivia, we can move on to our next segment. It is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I each challenge each other with 3 trivia questions. One easy, one medium, one hard. Try and stump the other. I just lost a season 7 wager, and I'm going to have to eat a lot of cheese. I don't know what we're doing for season 8. I'm going to try and talk Matt into a tattoo being on the line. Because if I lose, and I already want one, so like I can kill two birds with one stone. Matt, you're not going to lose. Like, it's all right. You can just like say like yes, and then there's no consequences. I could literally say like $1 million is on the line. It doesn't matter because you're not going to have to pay.
I'm not willing to take that risk. Sorry.
I'm not giving up yet. I'm going to use my powers of persuasion.
Fair enough.
I have an easy question, Matt. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All these questions are from the very first episode of The Simpsons, Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire.
Oh my God. I'm screwed.
The Simpsons, easy question. The Simpsons acquire who in Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire?
Santa's Little Helper.
That is correct. See, easy.
Yay.
You got this.
Uh-huh. All right. Are you ready for your easy question?
Sure.
All right. These are all from Bart Carney. Who was the guest star in Bart Carney?
Can I just say Ernest? That doesn't count, does it?
Yeah, it's easy. I'll give it to you. Yes, Jim Varney.
Jim Varney. Yeah, Ernest.
Uh-huh. Ernest.
I mean, he was in other things, but come on.
That's his most famous role, by far.
Have you gone back and watched Ernest Goes to Africa, Matt?
I haven't watched any Ernest movie since I was a kid. I'm kind of scared.
Don't watch Ernest Goes to Africa or Ernest Goes to Jail. Either of those. Don't see them. They're
What about Ernest Saves Christmas?
That's not so bad. Plus, what's the Halloween one? Ernest Scared Stupid. That's all right.
Yeah.
Ones are okay, but the other ones... They're rough. Your medium question. What are the odds in The Simpsons Roasting on Open Fire of Santa's Little Helper winning his race?
Isn't it 800-1?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
It is 99-1.
99. Wow. All right.
My medium question?
Oh, you want your medium question?
Yes, right. I would like it, please.
What two things does Principal Skinner attempt to win in the ring toss game?
He's with his mother and he's tries to win something. Isn't it in the first the second thing is a knife, I want to say, and the first thing is what is it, and she's like win it, and then she starts picking on him and then he starts going for the knife, I want to say. The first one is I can't remember. Is it has to be something that the ring can fit over. It has to be hard, you'd think. What do they need? What would she want? I don't know. A television.
I'm sorry, it's a lamp.
Oh, okay. It's a lamp and a knife?
It's a lamp and a knife,
yes. Okay, at least I got the knife right. I knew it was the second one was a knife. All right. Your hard question, Matt. Lisa portrays which Santa Claus in the school pageant?
Which Santa Claus? The Santa Claus of the South Seas.
The name, please?
Oh, man. Rapa Nui?
That is incorrect.
Oh, dang.
It is Tawanga.
Tawanga, of course. Yeah, how could I miss that?
Yeah, how could you miss that? Come on, Matt. All right. What is my hard question?
Your hard question. What was the name of the sister ship to the glass-bottom ship the Simpsons took?
Yeah, right. I'm going to get that one. The sister ship. I can't even name the ship they took. I'm supposed to remember the sister ship.
Neither can I, but I can name the sister ship. Because while they're on the ship, the guy goes, that's our sister ship, the blank. She went down with 88 souls just last week.
Oh, right. I don't know. The glass cannon.
I'm sorry. It is the Athena.
The Athena. All right. Well, yes. Okay. That's great. Hey, Matt, after 1 week, tied 1-1.
All right.
You know what, what the score was after 1 week last season?
I'm not good for you, I'm assuming.
No, it was 6-1. I was winning 6-1.
After 1 week? Wow.
I got all my points.
I was trying to go like super easy on you, and that almost backfired.
Yeah, it almost backfired by you winning by 15 points. Yeah, it almost backfired. 15 points is not close, Matt. I just wanted to break that to you.
Oh, okay.
But I'll do it for this segment. We can move on to our final segment, something we end every single episode with. It's time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show where I rank the episodes categorically, so we'll watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. This is a Treehouse of Horror, so we rank the segments compared to other Treehouse of Horror segments. We don't compare them to the general list anymore. It was getting messy there because Treehouse of Horror episodes are so strange. When we get to the Trilogy of Error style episodes and even this season's Simpsons spinoff showcase, I think we're going to have more trouble there too, but we'll see. We'll start from the top. The Thing and I. Where do you put that, Matt?
Let's see. The Thing and I. That's a good question. That one's pretty good. I would probably say
it's my favorite of these three. I would say,
yeah, me too. I would probably put it number five, maybe.
I was looking right at number five, so I think that is a perfect spot.
No discussion needed.
No discussion.
It's not quite as good as Homer going back in time and squashing dinosaurs, but it's better than a gremlin on the school bus for Bart.
Yes, I think that when you shout out the exact number I was thinking, I think we can call it at that. The second segment is Genesis Tub. Where does that go?
I wasn't really a big fan of the Genesis Tub.
I think it's fine. Like, it's not great.
It's better than, like, the Treehouse of Horror 1 or 2 kind of stuff, but I don't know.
I think
it's better than King Homer.
Better than King Homer?
Yeah. Monkey's Paw, I don't know.
I don't think it's better than Monkey's Paw.
Yeah, I don't.
It's like, I would actually put it probably like above Homer Stein. I would put it at 15.
Hungry Are the Damned. What was Hungry Are the Damned? Which one was that one? What was that one about? Do you remember?
I'm trying to recall. Hungry Are the Damned. Oh, that was the from Treehouse 1 where the
King, oh, yeah, first, the per, aliens, King Kodos.
First appearance of King Kodos, yeah. I would put it just below that.
That sounds good.
I don't know. Like I
can jive with that.
I don't know. Like, I like King Homer because, like, it actually goes for, like, it has, like, it's in black and white. It has, like, it
has a very retro pastiche, but it's still Simpsons-y.
And Hungry of the Damned is, like, one of my favorite Twilight. It's parodying one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes. And this is parodying a Twilight Zone episode that I've seen maybe one time. So Genesis Tub, number 15 out of 20. And finally, Citizen Kang. If you had asked me like 6 months ago to rank this, it would be much higher.
Yeah. When it wasn't reality, it was easier to laugh at this. Do you think it's better than the Genesis Tub from this one?
Yeah. It's not like it's quantifiably bad or anything. Like, all my opinions about it are kind of just because of current events. It's not really...
Yeah.
Not because anything the episode did poorly. You know, I think it's very funny. I think it's actually very, very clever and very, like, funny, but it hasn't aged well for, I mean, it does purposefully target politics. Like, that is what that episode is. It is like, hey, aliens took over the two candidates and there is no appreciable difference. Like, I like...
No one noticed and no one was like, this is a weird...
Yeah, like oh, that's yeah, the... There's a part of me that really appreciates that. I think that part of me is also the much younger version of myself. The much older version of myself is like, no, you probably should care. Like, I know it's like, it does. You can't feel helpless when you're voting, especially in the U.S. with two major parties that don't necessarily either really suit what you believe and you don't know what to do. I don't know. I don't know where to put it. I don't know where to put it. How about number 10?
Number 10. Okay, that puts at just below Bart Simpson's Dracula, just above Nightmare on Evergreen Terrace. I think that's a good spot for it.
Well, actually, it's right above Bart Simpson's Dracula, right below Dial Z for Zombies.
Right. Yeah, because Dial Z for Zombies, that was pretty impressive. I don't think I could live with it above that.
I think that's a good spot to represent. Confliction.
Our new feeling.
Confliction. That's. I think that's the conflicted feelings. Maybe like in a decade, maybe Citizen Kang would be higher. I don't know. Well, you know, in a decade, we can check back in our rankings, Matt, and we can do an anniversary episode and see how we feel. That's the plan, right? Like, after we finish all the Simpsons, we just start over and re-rank them all?
Well, we re-rank them all, and then we go back and we rank our episodes about these episodes.
So it's the Simpsons show. We'll listen to our show, exactly, and then rank our episodes. It probably would actually turn out surprisingly close to the original rankings, because I think our best episodes are the ones, the episodes we love the most. So we have a new list of the Trails of Horror segments. The Shining is still number one, with Bad Dream House at 21 in last place. Our new entries are The Thing and I at 5, Citizen Kane at 10, and The Genesis Tub at 16. It's nice to see a Trails of Horror. Can't wait till next season to see you again.
Indeed.
Nice little check-in with some Trails of Horror. You can find this list at our website, simplythesimpsonsshow.com. Links to everything there, Facebook or Twitter, our RSS feed. New episodes downloadable and streaming. Every episode is on the website. It is not a perfect solution. You can stream and download them. Like, our RSS feed only archives the last 100 episodes. I will be eventually changing a host, and that will no longer be a problem. But that is going to be a lot of work, and it's going to take a while to do. But for now, if you want to listen to earlier episodes, you can go to our website and they're all there. I understand it's not perfect. It doesn't launch in your podcast app, but it's, you know, got to make do. I'm not happy with it myself. Matt, our next episode is You Only Move Twice.
Oh boy.
I don't think it's controversial to say one of the most treasured episodes of The Simpsons.
Yeah, I think there's at least a couple of those in this particular season. So we're going to have it's going to be a long season, guys. Strap in.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, season 8 is, You Only Move Twice is one of my most revered episodes. Like, it's gotten to the point that it's so good that it's boring, but I have a feeling we're going to have another long episode. But we'll talk about that next week. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. Please check out my other podcasts, The Handsome Boys Comics Hour, which is about comic books, and The Serial Fanaticist. It's about a lot of stuff. The last episode was me gabbing about podcasting by myself. Matt does not participate in social media. Unless you're a certain love Patreon backer, you will not find him.
That's true. However, in doing my research for You Only Move Twice, I have decided I will attempt to solicit job offers and move to a different town to see if it's all it's cracked up to be. I predict it will not be.
Edmonton's a great place, Matt. You should move here.
If there were only jobs and less snow.
The snow is mostly gone. I already said, like,
say that, but I don't trust you. I don't trust an Edmonton's view of snow.
It's mostly melted. It's mostly ice that's left.
That's even worse.
You just got to change your tires, get new shoes. You're fine. That's all you need.
Or never go outside.
I mean, that is also a solution, and that's one I personally ascribe to. But, you know, you can't always stay inside. You know, you have to go get food.
Hence delivery.
I mean, another philosophy I do personally ascribe to, but that gets awfully expensive.
That's true.
With that, I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching those episodes.